Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mian Team.
QNL.
With guest co-hosts.
Alpha Shark.
D-A-C-O-L-E.
James Robertson.
Everyone is doing the blue squiggles dance?
Yep.
The blue squiggles dance.
Yeah.
It's like disco, except even worse. It's the blue squiggles dance. It's the blue squiggles dance. And you need to include this in podcast, so everybody will know why Mackie tells me not to sing.
Oh, that's right. No, Mackie, we can all sing.
Because it's the blue squiggles dance.
The vicious god does not mean the lowest god.
Oh, my God.
No.
Mackie, you are not keeping up with contractual obligations. This is terrible.
Mackie's also got Lisa on that bandwagon, and Lisa is here, so...
Yeah, but she's outnumbered.
I'm guessing this is not going to be an award-winning episode, then?
Well, there's still time to turn it around.
We have award-winning episodes?
That assumes there ever was or will be an award-winning episode.
I thought all of our episodes were award-winning.
Well, that depends on who's giving out the award.
What, the Perseverance Award in the face of sheer...
Well, yeah, pretty much. This thing has been around for, like, years, so yeah, that works.
Yeah, it has been years.
You do deserve an award for perseverance on this getting over 100 episodes, because I've seen podcasts just fizzle out after like 10 or so. So you do deserve congrats for that.
Well, thank you. Now, it is true that now that we're at 100 episodes, we can more easily get into syndication. So, oh, wait.
This is James Robertson, co-host for this week's episode. Of course, Daniel Quick is on.
Weak body, civ strong, mind attuned.
I'll let the audience decide if that means anything. We also have Philip Bellew.
Bringing you the latest in abusive tactics.
Lisa Bang.
My life is common knowledge.
And we also have Zaldar.
Daniel Cole, now with more bitching and ranting.
Scott.
I haven't played Civilization V, so I'll be imitating Imran today.
They described it in PC Gamer as if someone had described the basics of Civ to someone who had never played it before and then told them to go make the game. It has the basics of what a Civ game is, but everything else is almost completely different.
It's a good game. It's not complete, but you might enjoy it. It's still fun to play it, so at least check it out. And it is different from the other Civs. Your mileage may vary, but at least for the most part, I've enjoyed my attempts at playing it.
It is definitely worth owning if you are a military player at all in Civ. And honestly, if you're not, I would still recommend it. Don't let the changes scare you. Yes, you're going to have to go back and learn it again. That's a good thing. It's fun. That's what's enjoyable.
In the Senate today, we discussed whether this first strike promotion has any use or not.
In forum talk, we discussed first thoughts, initial impressions on Civilization V, Cultural Victory, the Civ 5 community game over on We Play Civ, and playing to lose, AI and Civilization, or is the AI playing for you to lose?
And in the theater, recalling a Civ 4 competitive team multiplayer game that featured a past guest co-host.
To the Senate, where we discuss game strategy.
First strike is useless. This thread was started by Rogue and stated that it seems the first strike ability is useless. He used the Chinese unique unit, Chou Kunu, probably mispronounced that, with upgrades 3 to 4 first strikes, and he thought that was great, but no, and then had it fighting chariots and Lombo and elephants, that's what it lost against. So he's complaining that the first strike failed him.
Well, yeah, but first strike is that just because it fails you once does not mean it's useless. And we should say we're talking about 4 here.
Yes.
I have not found it that it's good in 4 on attacking, but for defending, he may not have known, but longbowmen in 4 have first strike as well. For defending, it's absolutely freaking wonderful. Beyond amazing.
Technically speaking, there's no difference if you're attacking or defending with first strikes. Well, okay, they're completely garbage if they're against the unit that ignores it, such as knights or horse archers or anything promoted to flanking too, that kind of stuff. But if you have an advantage over the unit you're attacking or defending in the first strikes, you essentially get combat rounds where if you win, you do damage, and if you lose, you don't take any damage at all. So units with drill have a much higher chance of surviving battles unscathed than typical units. And drill becomes very strong when you already have either a high base strength differential or you have a high multiplier differential, such as on defense, as Zaldar said. But that can also be acquired via siege damage, for example. Like, say you're basically hit everything down to half health. Now, if you have a lot of first strikes, there's a good chance you're going to be killing things repeatedly without taking any damage. And on top of that, the way the game works, the combat odds, it treats first strikes differently than combat promotions when it comes to getting experience. So you'll actually get more experience using a drill-promoted unit than a combat-promoted unit, and that disparity is not entirely explained by the lower supposed odds. So it has a place in the game, absolutely. You don't want to just spam drill promotions, but the Chocobo, for example, is an excellent unique when you lose to its potential, and anything else with a lot of first strikes can do well as well.
Like anything else, you have to know how you're using it. If you're just attacking something that has the same strength as you, and you haven't attacked it before with catapults or things or cannons,
any siege, yeah,
then it's not going to be as strong as some others. But when you use it correctly, it's incredible.
Yeah, there's some breakpoints there, too.
That's why I use it mostly on defense.
If you're fighting, like, heads up in the field, combat's going to beat drill every single time, because the 10% stronger than the first strikes.
Right.
But if you're, like, sitting in, say, a hill forest with an archer unit, drill could easily be the better option, just because you already have a lot of strength multiplier, and a smaller percentage increase to your strength isn't as good as an extra combat round chance when you have that much difference. So, yeah, it really does just depend.
There's the argument in the thread from Derricon and Tyrell about that if you are out-teching your opponent, then with the first strike that comes with drill, I'll quote Tyrell here, help your troops escape combat without taking any damage at all so you don't have to stop to heal. You can plow through a backward sieve's cities faster that way, quote-unquote, and there's always exceptions to everything. But I think one of the best posts actually is from Bibor, because there's a lot of math in this thread, including the opening post, and we all know that fatal exception errors can happen if you are trying to think about math too much. So,
Yep.
He has a nice, simple equation. If total strength of your unit is greater or equal to the total strength of their unit, go first strikes. But if total strength of your unit is less than the total strength of their unit, then go combat or specialize, such as flanking that Phil mentioned before, formation, shock, etc.
That's a little oversimplified, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would say...
Just because if you don't have a lot of strength differential, you're still going to get a significant odds increase from going combat and drill.
Right.
Or for first strikes. You have to have fairly high disparity before first strikes start taking priority over combat promotions, or especially counter promotions that are 25%, like formation or shock or pinch.
That's why it's mostly used on defense, because most of the time you're only going to have that huge differential on defense.
And even with tech leads, it's a little difficult to milk it, just because you can just as easily not take promotions right away and then use your promotions to heal. Survive abuse, just saying.
Mm-hmm.
No. It's also in Civ 4, so there you go. Promotional healing across two Civs.
And I don't think that's abuse at all. You have to have a promotion to be able to do it.
No, I agree. It's a little silly, though, because it's a lot of oomph all of a sudden for a unit that's been under fire.
Almost dead, right.
Yeah.
As much as I have here, in more of an academic sense, highlighted the strengths of drill, I think the only time I ever chose drill as a promotion was by accident. If it's inherent to the unit, great, but it's not a promotion line that I'm going to be looking at, not because it's useless, like the opening poster says, nothing is useless, but everything else, or most everything else, is stronger more often than not.
I would just like to point out to all of our listeners that Dan Q secretly loves the protective trait, and so when he says if it's inherent to the unit, he means most of the time in his case, because he just loves protective, I'm just saying.
Because that's who he plays.
Yeah, he likes to fight them too.
I'd also like to profess my love for the whale resource.
Oh, yes.
It's the best resource in the game. And if anybody has that, I'm going to hate you and build a voodoo doll and stick needles in you. And oh, I've said too much already.
What he means is he's just going to take the city with the whales.
It also seems to me that this whole thread started with something that's kind of anecdotal. I mean,
exactly.
You've got one or two instances where a guy in one game ran into a problem and then seems to have extrapolated that to be a general problem.
Which in forum posts about Civ is a common thing. People don't realize that, like anything else in science, you have to have a whole lot of samples before you can do anything. Oh, crap. Did I just say science? Excuse me. We are talking about a game here.
Low beakers per turn.
For completeness sake, a little bit on this topic for listeners. And yes, we already mentioned we're talking about Civ 4, not Civ 5. The drill line, drill 1 through 4, applying to archery, siege, armored, helicopter, and naval units, where drill 3 and 4 give you plus 2 first strikes, plus 2 first strike chance in drill 3, plus 2 first strikes in drill 4.
Did you say gunpowder on that list?
No, I did not, because that's actually getting the gunpowder and melee units for woodsman 3 for plus 2 first strikes.
You can take drill on gunpowder.
Protective zones get drill automatically, so yeah. Not totally not worth it. And there's a part in this thread talking about putting drill on Oromo warriors, because they already start with drill, and if you're with a protective civ, then you only have to have 5 experience to get drill 4, which is not bad. It usually takes 3 promotions to get to drill 4 in the first place, which is why people don't bother.
Yeah, Oromos are ridiculous, because they're also immune to first strikes, so they can just milk that first strike lead on the AI or whatever you're fighting like crazy. They're hard countered by, like, knights, but other than that, nothing really wants to fight those. Because on top of their first strikes, they start with a couple implicitly, too, like the samurai. It just gets ridiculous how many they can have.
I've actually put drill on catapults before, because, you know, I'll have a stack coming, and then I'll be like, oh, crap, because there's, like, a bigger stack coming towards my stack. And I know that my stack's going to get attacked, so since I have promotions and I'm not going to attack a city right now, might as well go with drill for at least a couple catapults.
Drill cat will kill your family! Oh man, I still remember somebody started a thread about putting drill on siege. There are a couple times you want to do it. If you're forced to defend with the siege, like if it's the only thing you have as an option for standing in your city, then you really don't have anything else that can be viable. And also, if you're fighting very few enemy troops, or the enemy troops are immune to collateral damage, you would use it. But otherwise, you normally would want either City Raider or Barrage.
City Raider, usually.
Usually City Raider. But if you're fighting in the field, you probably want Barrage. Because the AI entered your borders with a stack of 30 units, and you have 10 catapults next to them.
And if they come out of the cities, that's a nice way to snipe some units without the city defense bonus.
Yeah.
How to conclude this topic without awkward silence. Oh, I know. Next time on Polycast, second strikes.
Let's go with the awkward silence.
That is, of course, assuming that, you know, we're not talking about nuclear weapons and you're still around after the first strike.
This is Forum Talk, where we investigate hot Civ issues in the forums.
If you want to play militarily, if you want to play a Civ game that has actual military tactics and where it matters where you move your units and what you do with them, and where your units are incredibly, incredibly important and you don't want them to die even more so than in Civ 4, then Civ 5 is great. If you want to play culture, if you want to play science, if you're a builder, there's really not much here for you. It's not in Civ 4. To win a cultural victory, you have to complete 5 of the government tracks, which means getting a gazillion culture points, basically. City you have, the speed with which you get culture points decreases by 30%. After they nerfed the wonders as part of the testing.
Did they ever?
I couldn't win a culture victory in a single-player game, even with, like, 2 cities, because Gandhi would come and bull rush me. It's great for what it does, but it's a more of a companion piece to Civ 4 than a replacement for Civ 4, in my opinion.
You would need to hold a tech lead. That's what you would need to do with a few cities. And the AI is so stupidly terrible at attacking you that as long as you're on parity, you can probably defend against it endlessly.
Yeah, I disagree.
I strongly doubt competitive multiplayer that you would get very far towards a cultural victory when somebody's making a serious effort to kill you and watching that you're nearing a culture victory. basically under the game design of Civ, if military matters at all, it's just about impossible to balance that so that somebody can go balls to the wall culture and still defend themselves when somebody else is going all out military. And that's just part of how the game is.
Even in a duel, if you have choke points and you have archers and you have longbowmen in Civ 5, I think it would be possible. Now, we tested it in testing. Were they as competitive as, say, a normal multiplayer game now? Probably not. But we had some very good multiplayer people on the testing groups. It's absolutely impossible now because the wonders were nerfed drastically, which is one of the things I complained about.
They really changed the culture and happiness model, and it's going to take players a while to get used to that. When I first looked at that, I was like, oh my god, what am I going to do with this? I had no idea. But yeah, culture, rather than being something kind of abstract to just push borders, now has a very important role in the game because it unlocks your social policies,
right?
And those can have such a huge impact on your empire. I mean, that can directly lead to happiness or military strength or wherever you apply it. And then your happiness over the flow can go into golden ages. If you get under happiness, it kills your production. If you go bad enough, it even makes your military weaker.
You have to be like minus 10 a turn.
We Play Civ has started a Civilization 5 community game. It's actually going to be a single-player game played as a community effort, probably because not everybody in the community can actually play a multiplayer game together.
I've got involved in a couple of democracy games. It's on Polton, and it's a very interesting experience. It works better with Alpha Centauri, in my opinion.
Well, how long would it take to play one of these?
Oh, several months.
I heard years come out first.
I mean, but it wasn't the game. Actual playing of the game, that you would learn things, you would learn how to play the game better, and it was a community interaction almost more than anything else that was what people enjoyed about it.
I should say there is a difference here. The democracy game is not single player and there's no AI.
Oh, okay. That's a new iteration then. The democracy games I have played in the past, it was not teams of people against each other.
Following statement from Rob when he's talking about the community game beginning, quote, "It is similar to what is known as a democracy game, except it is being run purely for the purposes of fun, learning, and growing a thriving, enjoyable Civ community," unquote. What's the difference with a democracy game then? What, is it being run for something other than purely for the purposes of fun? Am I missing something?
You're missing all the lobbyists in the democracy game, Dan.
Another game variation is called a diplomacy game, and you would have a group of people together, and you would actually write forum story about your game as you played the game. There were generally some rules that ran along with it. It was supposed to be not much warfare. I think you had to literally declare war about 5 days before you actually attack somebody, and you had to do it in the forum where you were talking about the game. But you would make leaders, and you would role-play the leader of your civilization on the forum. After every turn or something, you would post a little bit about what happened or continue the story in some way. Those were a lot of fun. They took freaking forever because not only did you have to literally play the game, you had to go and write a story as you did it. It shows, I think, the extreme flexibility of the game that you can do these kind of things with it. You can literally make it almost into a role-playing game.
And another thread on the forum that We Play Civ has set up dedicated to the Civ 5 community game, Rob Warham, who did the press release on the We Play Civ homepage, the news item in general, talks about also to what Daniel was saying with regards to a democracy game, where one player is chosen by the community to be president, who is the turn player, and another is chosen to be the vice president. They stay in these positions for 2 weeks, and then another president and vice president are elected to play the game.
Right.
Over the course of the game, posts, threads, and polls can be made by any community member to suggest various actions and to gain the community's thoughts on particular aspects of the game, such as, should we scout further to the west or head north towards that barbarian camp? Should we befriend or shun that city-state? And should we attack the French? !!
Always you should attack the French.
President then collects all the various opinions of the community and applies them to the actual game, reports back on what has been happening, and the process begins again, quote-unquote. So when it says the president, when he's collecting all the various opinions and applies them to the actual game, the intent is that since you are the president and you have been elected to represent the people, which is the community involved in the game, that majority goes?
To a large extent, but not always. But that's a good way not to get elected again.
Hey, just like in real life. What do you know?
Exactly. I mean, I was just going to say, just like in real life, you can say one thing and do another quite often. Now, I don't think that happens too much in community games, but I do think there are a lot of times there is fairly kind of ridiculously intense discussion about what people should do.
Yeah.
I know myself, I don't have the patience.
Yeah.
For this, the end result is something that if you can have the patience for that, that would be quite enjoyable, and you get to know people in the community as well.
I know the Democratic games in CFC that I'm in, and I know Phil is in one, it has like a more epic feel. It feels like the way Civ is supposed to be played. It's supposed to be a long, drawn-out game. It's not an RTS where you play it in like 10, 20 minutes and you've just, you know, shot the heck out of everything. And Civ is supposed to have democracy and role-playing and just have this very historical, cultural feel to it. With RTS games and first-person shooter games, it's just all about the action, which is fine, you know. That's fine for someone who wants the action, but for someone who wants an epic feel, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, that the democracy game is good multiplayer, and that might work for Civ 5 as well.
Well, it sounds like it'd be hard to keep that kind of game together. I mean, the more people you add in those groups to that multiple game, the easier it would be for it to fall apart.
It is.
Well, what happens is the people in the groups, I would assume, come and go, but you have the group survives.
Yeah. You'll have a turn player, someone that says, okay, I'm going to do the turns, someone else will do a different aspect.
I guess it's a way to make Civ into a competitive, cooperative game.
Yeah, definitely. And the single player one does sound interesting. I mean, I'm sure that they want to win the game. They'll figure out what victory will work for them, and they'll try to go for it as a community.
Yeah, I think they would like to win, but even if they don't win, recognizing that the value of just actually going through the process, especially given when it's a new game, let's learn it together. But democracy games I have heard of, where it's like one person, like they're describing here in a community game, but not only have there been intra-sites, so intra-communities, if you view like a Polton, as part of a Civ community, and Civ Fanatics is a Civ community, like a Polton would have its democracy game that's with their forum members, but there have also been inter-site, inter-community democracy games, which have been hosted in the forums of either Apolton or Civ Fanatics, so it's kind of, you start with a base model, and then you start adding more people and adding more complexity, which, as James said, you add more pieces to the puzzle, more likely for it to fall apart, but if you can bring it together, it'd be that much more impressive, and I have seen it passing, develop and evolve and come to at least a reasonably satisfactory conclusion, so all the more power to them, really.
The CFC side of this topic was started by SS-18ICBM, which is awesome. Nukes are great in this game. You should definitely consider them. Anyway, it's a summary of the YouTube video that's about an hour long that Soren presented on good versus fun AI.
Aren't they the same thing?
Yeah, well, he differentiated them in that a good AI is something that's playing to win and optimizing its chances to win within the rules, whereas a fun AI is something that's designed to create an immersive experience for the player and have the game be fun in a single-player setting.
Ooh, wow. Okay, yeah, he's pretty much already lost me. Because I totally disagree with that.
Soren Johnson said that the StarCraft II was a good AI game where the AI is trying to gun for you and kill you in the most efficient way possible, and I disagreed with that because I felt that StarCraft II actually represented both the good and fun AI. The good AI is when it is, again, trying to kill you any way possible, and this happens in multiplayer, where it will try to rush you and get out units quickly and efficiently in the best way possible to destroy you, whereas the fun AI is the campaign mode or the story mode. It has a certain set scenario and scripts, and it's going to do things this way, and you will clearly see it being inefficient. Like, I was playing recently one of the near end game missions, and it has all these little layers, and all these layers are resource gathering spots where the workers are supposed to, call drones, but the workers are supposed to bring in resources, and I could see that these layers were basically defunct. They weren't active. They were just sitting there waiting for me to destroy them and put my own command centers there. So that, to me, is the non-good AI. That's the fun AI. That's the one that's letting me win, basically. And I think that's the point, is the fun AI is playing to lose, is playing to let the human win and have a fun experience, whereas the good AI is trying to kill you.
The point of the game is the competition between you and the AI. AI should even in the story-based game, should be trying to kill you.
Right.
But especially in something like Civ 4, where there is no story, the AI should be trying to kill you.
Well, then you're not disagreeing with me. You're disagreeing with Soren.
Oh, yes, I'm highly disagreeing with Soren.
Well, no. There's actually a point here.
That's the most retarded thing I have ever heard.
Exactly.
No, not necessarily. Not necessarily.
Thank God he doesn't work for Fraxis anymore.
No, keep in mind that AI could use perfect knowledge and rational decisions to gun for you in the most efficient way possible.
Yes.
But generally speaking, no human player would ever do that because people aren't always rational, whether in games or in real life. If you look at the history of warfare, for instance, plenty of leaders have done plenty of completely irrational things in warfare that you look at after the fact and say, that's just stupid. Why did they do that? And the same thing happens in Civ games. People will persist in strategies
that
when you go back and look, you wonder, why in God's name did they do X instead of Y?
But the AI is supposed to teach you not to do that.
The point of having an AI that does nothing but rationally gun for you. If you have an AI that used perfect knowledge and just gunned for you, it might be virtually impossible to beat.
Yeah, right.
And I think the analogy he uses early in the talk about chess games is if you play the Deep Blue Chess program, you will never win.
No, you will if you know how to play the game and you are good, because people do.
Say that, like, Garry Kasparov doesn't know how to play chess.
Right.
Well, no, but he won.
Not very often. The best chess AIs now beat people on a regular basis, even grandmasters.
Yeah, I think the Deep Blue has been developed to the point where it can do that.
Right.
I disagree with that, but okay.
But I'm calling BS on this. There is no way that they have designed anywhere near an AI that could be remotely competitive with a competent human being without bonuses.
No. I don't think he's making the argument that they have an AI that can do that. I think he's making more of a theoretical argument that if you built an AI like that, it would not be fun to play.
I don't think you can build an AI like that.
So they don't want to do that.
If you built an AI that used the knowledge that it had in the most efficient way possible, I think that would be good. Now, of course, the AI could know things that a human player wouldn't know, but you shouldn't design the AI to have perfect knowledge. It shouldn't know what troops are in my city unless it has a unit there looking at them.
Correct.
But it should use the knowledge that it has in the best way possible, especially on the higher levels.
Yeah. So that's the one thing that really bothers me about AI.
If you're not on Settler, then go away.
Civ 4 AI is abysmal.
Yeah. It's stupid.
Basically, it doesn't play well, and they substitute cheating in for that. The AI in Civ 4 absolutely does know what units you have in every single city.
And that's ridiculous.
It also knows when you make trades with other civilizations.
Yeah.
Even if you have not yet met that AI, it knows you traded with that civilization. And it just has so many flaws in it. Like, it'll sign a peace treaty with another AI. If it rolls a war check and decides to declare war on somebody, it can't declare war on the person it just was fighting. So it will ship troops across the war to declare on you or somebody else and completely expose itself and then just roll over and die. That's the kind of stuff where you can lose over things like that, even if you block the AI just because it loses all its cities to its former or worst enemy. And the AI isn't even trying to win. It's just nonsense because of the number of bonuses it gets.
In the talk, he was pretty explicit about that. He mentions that they don't really, in Civ 4, they don't really try to build an AI that will outthink you. They just give it bonuses.
And that is so unbelievably stupid.
I would rather an AI within its flavor constraints, because you have some people that tend towards being builders or people that tend towards being more mongers.
Right, certainly. Don't take care of those.
But within its constraints, play to win.
Exactly.
In Stock Beyond the Sword, there's only one programmed victory condition that the AIs even attempt to pursue, and that's culture, and that's only because Blake, not Soren, put that in. Other than that, the AI does not know how to actively pursue any victory conditions unless you are playing better Beyond the Sword AI. It's finally released, and that was done completely by like JDog 5000 and a couple other people. In Stock Beyond the Sword, the AI doesn't even try to win. It's like only one person's playing the game. It's to such an extreme that it's not fun. Competing against bonuses and arbitrary random numbers. Or you play perfectly and you overcome the AI bonuses only because the AI plays like a total idiot with those bonuses, and sometimes you win. But whether you win or not, it's completely based on the random number generator. You can get face rolled in one game and dominate in the next with the exact same play quality. To me, luck-based games, not fun.
Agreed. And I really did not think Civ was like that.
Especially the AI itself, you should not have the game decided whether you win or lose on turn zero. That just really irks me.
there is a dice roller in Civ, Dan, and it's not completely dependent on it, but it does have it. Like with the battles, you'll have the percentage 99. There is a 0.1% chance that 99 unit could lose, and it has happened, especially in multiplayer, where I've played with these guys on Saturday, and I'll have a 90% chance of winning, and the unit will get wiped out. And the reverse is true, too. I've had some low percentage winners win, just because of the dice decided to be nice to me. It is there.
Okay, fine. But now you're talking about games that you spend 3 hours playing, right? You basically can have the game decided on turn zero before you start playing and not realize that until like an hour and a half, 2 hours in, because the bonuses they fed the AI are so great and its intelligence is so low that it can just arbitrarily get into runaway situations. Okay, you might lose like a 90% battle, maybe even two or three in a row. But when you're playing like Immortal or Deity, you're looking at, say, I'll just make up a number, but it's pretty significant. But say like 50% of the time, you lose before you start, but you still play for 2 hours until you realize it. And then you meet the guy on the other continent, and it's like, oh, look, hi, I'm Shaka with 40 cities and 3 vassals, screw you. And you can't do anything to that. The worst part is, like, you look at the replay then, and you see that Shaka spawned in such a way that that was guaranteed. You had no chance there. And the only reason that you had no chance was the AI bonuses rather than the AI pursuing winning strategies, where if it had pursued winning strategies and had less bonuses, that would not have been nearly as runaway of a situation, and that would not be a blown game. That really pisses me off in Civ 4.
Well, here's what I wonder about with that kind of thing. I don't know anything about the internals of these shops, but I wonder if the reason they do the bonus instead of something more akin to a real AI is that investing in a real AI would take real money.
Yeah.
Chopping bonuses in is like a trivial trick. I mean, it's not that anybody can do it in a way that scales, but it's a whole lot easier to decide that the AI can build swordsmen 40% cheaper than you can than it is to program the logic and intelligence to use them intelligently.
So they're being American and being half-assed.
Not just American. I think that's a universal.
Oh, yeah, that's humanity.
Yeah.
I'm insulted.
I work with plenty of people elsewhere who qualify for the same statistic.
Economic incentive models point that that's exactly what they would do. And yes, it's cheaper, but it also cheapens the gameplay experience, and it does so significantly.
Hey,
and we should stop buying games that do that, and I'm going to.
That's not what Soren said he was doing in his presentation. He didn't say, like, oh, we're going to make a cheap AI and feed it bonuses and call it fun rather than good. That's not the point he was attempting to make.
No, but that's the point he made.
No, but you wonder if what he was doing was trying to gussy up his argument by giving it a more glorious wrapper.
Well, sure. That's exactly what he was trying to do. I have no doubt.
That's what it seemed like.
Because these AIs barely even roleplay the way they should be. But it's different from programming chess, too, because the number of different potential decisions is much greater.
Right.
And the variance from game to game is just leagues different. I mean, chess is the same every game. You start with the same pieces on the same tiles each and every time. Whereas in a Civ game, the random number generator spewing all kinds of different hammer and food and distributions and how easy it is to secure land and, you know, all that kind of stuff. It gets to the point where it's hard to plan for that stuff. I don't know how you would make a perfect AI. And even if you did your absolute best, I think it would struggle against humans without bonuses.
Agreed, but it doesn't mean you should try the best.
Yes, they absolutely should get the AI as good as it can be.
And then give it bonuses.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to go listen to this and scream at my computer, because that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Wow. Thank God he did not do the AI for Civ 5. Wow.
Well, it's not a deeply technical talk, so you can listen to it and follow along. I mean, he doesn't go into bits and bytes or anything. It's a pretty high-level thing.
Yeah, no, it's not hard to understand it.
It does sound like he's being obscure in a way and saying that, oh, well, we're trying to make a fun AI because we want to entertain everyone, and really it just seems to piss off the people that want an actual challenge compared to the people who are being casual, because I'm a casual player, and I don't really mind playing an easy game.
We'll play on Settler, then. Even would not a casual player like you, because I consider myself a casual player in reality as well, but I would rather have a AI where I actually had to think to win rather than just think to overcome bonuses. Now, I would think even a casual player would want that. I was actually going to look forward to being able to get better and play better on higher AIs, but if it's not really playing the game better, if it's just crap, then I don't care anymore.
had Michael walk me through a game on a higher level at one point when we were kicking a long train ride through France last year. And it seemed to me that from his description of how to win on higher levels, like if you're playing an Immortal or Deity, it really requires you to just micromanage everything all the time.
Deity, yes. If you know enough about the gameplay mechanics and strategy, you can get away with playing quickly and a little bit sloppy on Immortal. Unless you get one of those runaway situations I mentioned earlier.
Right, but in general, it sounded like if you want to play at those levels, what you have to do is be willing to micromanage a lot. If you don't want to micromanage, you want to play at Noble or below.
Nah, you can get by on Monarch with automating everything. I mean everything.
I never automate, but yeah.
No, I don't either.
I'll be fine with it if they just have less ridiculous bonuses and they're trying to win.
Agreed.
And that's fine with me.
Move towards a good AI as opposed to the fun AI.
Right.
Yeah, you're never going to make up an AI that can compete with a top-end human in a game like this. Unless the person programming the AI is like one of the best players in the world and one of the best programmers in the world, and he has a lot of time. That's the only way. And even then, you know, people would still be able to beat it. So you have to go for the good AI within reason.
Right.
It can have some fun aspects, but it should never be something where the AI is not a threat to win the game. Takes away from the experience.
Right, I think my only argument is that the AI should not be perfectly rational. They need to throw some randomness or personality into it. You don't want to fight a completely coldly rational AI.
Well, yeah, it wouldn't be fun if every single enemy civ behaved the exact same way either.
Agreed.
Within whatever their irrationality quirks are, they should be consistently attempting to achieve some kind of victory.
Be seated in the theater, where co-hosts share their gameplay experiences.
I'm so sad I missed that game that OysR played with the Polycast crew. From what I heard, that was sick. Like, he single-handedly, like, ruined one team's side. Like, it was a 3-on-3 with him playing as quote-unquote barbarians, and he just wrecked somebody. Like, he completely wiped somebody out and did a lot of damage to somebody else.
Oh, Dan C was the one that got ruined.
Yes, I do remember that now. Yeah.
He would have probably won that game if he'd stayed in, from what I heard. Like, well, that's just how good he is. It's crazy.
We had 7 human players, and he said that he was going to have to probably leave anyway because of the time zone difference and being tired. So he played by himself, and he just happened to be closer to the other team of 3. I wasn't on that team. I was on the other team. And I actually remember on my team there was a big discussion because we knew that OysR had really wreaked havoc with Daniel's land. And there was a big debate on our team whether to finish Daniel off or to actually go, I think Mackie was on your team too, wasn't she, Daniel?
I don't remember this. I must have blocked this out.
Yeah, it's Mackie and MLS.
Yeah, that's it. It was Mackie and MLS and Daniel Cole. And on my team, I had the largest military, and we had decided we were going to go after Daniel. And then at the last moment, I said, what do you think if I actually went after Mackie? Like, we're going to declare on everyone, but I had galleons that were positioned right outside where her major cities were, because I thought perhaps that since there had been so much effort in trying to save Daniel's land, that perhaps all of the troops, or a lot of the troops, more advanced, greater number combinations would be there, and there wouldn't be much in Mackie's land, you know, just enough for happiness, etc. So my teammates were like, well, okay, and it was a big risk, and I moved in, and we had, I don't know, I had galleons with, you know, macemen and knights, or something like that.
Cavalry.
Was it cavalry? Do we actually get that far?
Yeah, I remember this.
Oh yeah, Mackie had axemen and archers and warriors. That was the ultimately beginning of the end for that team. But yes, the descent started, as it were, because OysR just, where he happened to be located near on my team, we were like, whew, he didn't spawn near us. All right.
You probably could have backstabbed him. That might have been the best play, because that would have put you in a strong position while the other team was crippled. I don't know, I would have backstabbed him, and he would probably have wanted a rematch and killed me for it.
I just remember that one because it was just so...
atypical.
Yeah, atypical. It was atypical. And it was just kind of awesome that you just sacked Mackie's land so quickly. I was like, oh my god, you took like 3 or 4 of her cities in one turn. I automatically said, you win. Oh man.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7000.
4421-7659. That's 4421-288-POLY.
You can Skype us at The Polycast or email us at thepolycast@gmail.com.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast and Revcast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
I have never had the AI quit on me. That would be weird.
They called it quote-unquote rage quit, but what happens is you'll kill like a bunch of its units, like Bismarck declared on me. I killed like maybe 5 or 6 units and took a city and brought up a peace deal, and Bismarck was willing to give me every remaining city he had other than his capital, a bunch of resources, and all of his gold.
Kind of sounds like the an almost extreme opposite of the Civ 4 experience when you're going up against AI.
Yeah, it is. It is the extreme opposite of that. Like, you do very little damage, and they just fold.
As compared to Civ 4, when they've got next to nothing left.
We're doing fine on our own with 2 cities.
We will fight to the death.
And how often did we complain about that, you know? So...
Yeah, I think they're looking for a happy medium there. I think they'll fix that.
This is Daniel. Talked about a lot of stuff today. It was fun as usual. Feel free to go out and buy Civ 5 if you're looking for a war game. If you're looking for a culture or a science game, may want to stick to 4 for a while. Of course, it is up to you. I think, what is it? Somebody described Civ 5 as Civcraft, in relation to Warcraft, of course. I thought that was fairly perceptive. It is basically much more war-focused now than it has been in the past.
I'm not guilty of that. Not at all. No. That wasn't me. No.
Philip would never have said that because that was not was something that he would agree with. But
I actually was the one that said that. But okay. I was joking.
Well, I thought it was fairly perceptive.
It was when I, like, mowed down half the continent with 4 units.
Today on this wonderful podcast, we have had Daniel Quick, Lisa Bang, Philip Bellew, James Robertson, Scott Alphashard, and you've had the ever-wonderful me. So we hope you enjoyed yourselves, and...
More shinies.
Yes.
My 4 horsemen are coming for your city-states.
Still desperately in need of more coffee.
Hey, you replaced Mackie. Awesome.
And I replaced him random.
Oh, geez, you haven't lived until you've played on Preseller, though.
There, we haven't mentioned that in such a long time. I've been waiting for months.
On what now? What level is this?
You do not know your Polycast history, Mr.
No, Poly. I do not. There's a Pre-Settler level?
It's like before my time.
What is this? Pre-Settler level, you just hit the win button? Or...
Thanks for the spoiler alert, Daniel. The listeners really appreciate that.
Yes, I'm D-A-C-O-L-E, otherwise known as Daniel Cole, or otherwise known as, hey, you ugly person over there who can't introduce himself well.
You called yourself a person. No, I'm just kidding.
Dan's opening up brutal.
All right, this ranting and bit session has been brought to you by...
Oh no, we're not done yet. But okay, we should probably get to the more relevant ranting and bit.
Who needs actual topics? You can just listen to us. I'm sure that all your listeners listen to us for the ranting and bit.
Is there ever anything else?
Oh, no. Lisa, what topic would you like us to go to next? I'm getting ahead of myself.
I'd like to talk about,
Uh-oh.
Lisa, are you on fire? I mean, I was about to say, are you hot? And that would have just been
That's
really
hot.
Poor Lisa.
The timing of that was just incredible. Try again? Yeah, this is why most of our weekly Saturday games are cooperative, because it takes people a long time to heal emotionally. You can't tell us when we actually compete against each other.
We're all just really weak emotionally people, so you know.
we're going to talk ridiculous stuff, okay?
Let's talk ridiculous stuff. Fair enough.
Absolutely.
Let's just talk about getting rid of all of the major features, or some of the major features that make Civ 5 stand apart.
Right.
If we're going to build a... I wanted to say a stairway to heaven, but that sounds like, you know, something that you'd want to do. If we want to aim for the moon, well, we might as well just aim for frickin' Saturn or something.
Let's go!
Alpha Centauri.
That's right, yeah!
Record date?
September 25th, 2010.
Civilization 4, Warlords and Beyond the Sword sound clips, copyright Take 2 Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.